It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to the 14th episode of the NHL podcast presented by The Hockey News. My name is Sophia, and today I am pleased to be joined by my co-host, Rahil. See, Rahil, I want to ask how you're doing, but at the same time, I kind of know how you're doing and the reasons why you might be feeling that way, so I don't really want to ask, but at the same time, I kind of have to give you the floor.
You think, did the smile give it away? Is that what it was? Listen, it's been an eventful week to 2 weeks of hockey, obviously. Leafs losing last night to the Panthers, 3-2 in overtime, losing their series 4-1. I'll be honest with you. I think you guys should hold your head up high. Like, you guys got over that hump. I can't make that first round joke anymore. That being said, I can now make that second round joke. So I'm fine, Safir. I don't know about you. I want to know how you're doing. How are you coping?
Dude, I'm not doing well. Like, deep down, like, I'm smiling, but deep down, I am so hurt right now. I'm scarred, and you know what? Your tweets were not helping yesterday either. They were outright pissing me off, but you know what? I contain my emotions. I feel like I have good emotion regulation skills, so. But yeah, no, you know, the Leafs series was so disappointing because, like, yeah, the Boston Bruins are eliminated from the playoffs, New Jersey, so many good teams are eliminated. You know, I thought that this was the year that the Leafs could actually make it to the Stanley Cup Finals. And yeah, they just lost it. And for me, I would say it's Bobrovsky that stole the series.
Yeah, I do think he gave me very Carey Price 2021 vibes in that playoff run, not even just against the Leafs, but, you know, when we were playing against Vegas.
Why is it always against Toronto?
You tell me, man. You're the Leafs fan. You've been through it more than I have. But no, Bobrovsky stood on his head. I think a little bit more to add to that, though, is, like, I understand the refs were a big issue, and I will put my haha I'm happy bias aside. There were some controversial calls. I think some of the calls Leaf fans were a little bit crazy with. There were some calls, like, there was that icing in overtime. I literally looked to my girlfriend and I was like, Bobrovsky literally tried to play the puck, and they're calling it icing. If this goes in, it's going to be chaos. The one thing I will say, though, I think not a lot of Leaf fans are talking about this. So I actually looked it up. This is how invested into hating the Leafs I am, apparently.
Of course.
Being in Toronto, you have to. In the Tampa series, the Leafs were shooting at about 12%. Mm-hmm. In the Florida series, they were shooting at under 6%.
Wow, that's a huge difference.
And the shot difference was, there were very close shot difference. I think it was 170-something in the Florida series to 190-something in the Tampa series. Mm-hmm. So, and I know power plays play a factor into that, but Safir, what do you think about just, like, the fact that, like, there weren't that many goals scored on Toronto's end?
Well, you know what? On Toronto's end, I would say, well, our goaltending has been okay, to be honest, throughout mm-hmm. the playoffs, right? I mean, Samsonov was also a difference maker against the Tampa Bay Lightning. But in this series, there's a lot of low-scoring games, and it's hard to fault Samsonov, right?
Yeah.
But if the Leafs are not converting on their chances, so it's usually not somebody like Samsonov or the goaltending situation that you can mm-hmm. blame. Although Joseph Woll, I thought he played magnificent himself.
Absolutely.
Too, right? But, like, when you're going up against a guy like Bobrovsky, who saved an average of like 2.45 goals per game, mm-hmm. I mean, that's the kind of goalie that's going to ride you the entire way.
Yeah, and I think that's a perfect segue into, and I'm going to ask you this first, because, like, it's amazing how, you know, 10 to 15 days ago, it was pure elation for Leafs fans and Leafs Nation, and now it's this huge dull, everyone's hurt, everyone's upset, everyone, like, wants, like, Keith fired, everyone wants, you know, Dubas fired. Where do the Leafs go from here? What do you think as a Leafs fan they should do? And then I'll tell you without the bias.
You know what? I have to say, when I'm looking at Twitter, and Leafs fans are so passionate, right? They care so much. But it's giving panic mode energy on Twitter. They're like, tear it all down. Get rid of Keefe. Get rid of Dubas. Split up the core four. This was a failed experiment. Mm-hmm. But the way I think about it is that the Leafs are one of the best teams in the regular season. Mm-hmm. On paper, they are so talented. My concern is that if you split up the core four, and I know we've tried this a few times already, I worry that we regress a little bit.
Yeah.
What I would do, honestly, like perhaps looking at the coaching situation, you know, and I wish Morgan Riley had the C on his jersey because the passion that he showed in the playoffs was really remarkable. And if you were going to split up the core four, I think it has to be a very careful approach and one in which considers improving our defense, because mm-hmm. our offense has been one of the best for sure. I personally would not split up the core four, though, but if they did, they have to be very careful.
Yeah, so I it's interesting because there's a saying out there that doing the same thing over and over again is insanity, the definition of insanity. And that kind of was what the Leafs were doing, and it's tricky because you look at that, and based off that point, you're like, yeah, we should get rid of it. Mm-hmm. But you have arguably two of the top 10 players in the NHL. Nylander's probably top 25, top 20. Oh, yeah. Tavares is older. He's, you know, he's not worth how much he's getting paid, but he's still a point per game player. Like, you have a good core. And I think what it is, and I feel bad saying this, but I always look back at that John Tavares signing. Yes. And you see how much he's getting paid. And if you were just able to take 60 to 75% of that salary and put it on the back end, even take the whole thing. Let's say the Leafs had Matthews and then Kerfoot. That's not a great center depth. What if they had Petrangelo on their blue line?
That would make a huge difference.
That would make a huge difference. That would be incredible. And I think the other thing that I kind of want to just end off on is, obviously, you don't want to move the core four. I don't know if you're going to have a choice. Right. Because if you're Austin Matthews, I know he loves the city. And, you know, as a Habs fan, I would love to see him go to another team so I could kind of cheer for him. But, like, you do have to wonder, like, how long he's going to put up with this. Yeah. If he is a free agent, he would be free. I think he would be hitting free agency. You're going to have a lot of teams. Obviously, everyone talks about Arizona. If you take some money, sure, they're going to offer him a lot of money. But, like, what about a team like the Rangers? What about a team like the Blue Jackets, the Blackhawks? And I know they're terrible right now. They're not good. But, like, Bedard, Austin Matthews as a 1-2 punch. Like, I don't know what the trade would look like if it was a trade. I don't know if it'd be free agency. But Matthews might just be like, I want to win now. I'm out of here.
Yeah, and I think, if I'm not mistaken, Matthews has one more year to his deal. So he's definitely going to look for a payday. Now, I've seen some tweets about people saying, you know, perhaps offer Matthews a bridge year kind of, or a bridge gap kind of deal, so for like 4 years or whatever. I think that makes sense to me, kind of like instead of going like the full like 7-8 years, just give him like 4 years and see how that kind of goes. It gives some more time for some of these core players to find some success. The Tavares one is actually a great point because I think his cap hit is around 11 million. 11. Yeah, that's a lot. For a player who, honestly, a lot of us expected a little bit better on the ice. So, it's going to be an interesting offseason with the Leafs. I think the way that the Matthews contract negotiations go will determine the fate of the Maple Leafs for next year and a few years beyond.
I would love to see Matthews in another jersey. No offense.
No.
But moving on, obviously now the Florida Panthers are going to be playing the Carolina Hurricanes. And interesting matchup. I don't think it's one a lot of people expected. I mean, Carolina obviously was good in the regular season, but Florida coming out of nowhere, like, you know, beating two really good Eastern Conference teams. Listen, we'll touch on it really quick, Saphir, but what do you think about that series and that matchup?
You know what? The way that the Panthers are playing right now, it's kind of what everybody expected them to be last year. Mm-hmm. But I'm fully going with the Carolina Hurricanes for one reason and one reason only. Freddie Anderson's on the team.
Yeah.
And if you didn't know, I'm a big Freddie Anderson fan. I am Freddie Anderson too, actually, the junior version. But definitely going to be supporting the Canes. It'll be a close series.
Yeah, I think it'll be very interesting. I think the surprising thing out of Carolina was, you know, they obviously don't have, I believe it's Svechnikov and Pacioretty that are out, and they're still playing this well. I'm going to be honest with you guys. This Florida team is giving, and again, I'm taking the Habs bias out of it. Does this not look like that Montreal Canadiens run? They shocked their first round series. The second round, they just obliterate. I'm sorry, I'm not trying to give you flashbacks. The second round, they obliterate their opponent. I know it wasn't a sweep each way, but, and like now they're going up against a team where people are like, they have no chance. Like now the Cinderella run's going to end. It's time to get off the train. I'm going Florida. I think Bobrovsky is going to stand on his head. I could see Tkachuk just absolutely having fun with that Carolina core. I'm going Florida.
You know, I don't blame you. Like, I'm looking at the deserve to win meter after every game, and apparently the Leafs deserve to win 4 of the 5 games. And so, but Florida just finds a way. So, yeah, it wouldn't be surprising. I guess we'll see.
Yeah, it's definitely interesting. And obviously, we have the West is still to be decided. We have Seattle and Dallas still going on, which is fantastic series, by the way. I'm absolutely loving Joe Pavelski, like, scoring all these goals, turning back the time clock. It's absolutely awesome. And then, obviously, the Oilers and Golden Knights. Knights are up 3-2 there. That was a bit of an interesting one. It's been a big goal fest in that series.
Yeah, and it's so hard to predict who's going to win because every game appears to be, like, a high-scoring game, and I think most of the games have been blowouts, too, so it's really hard to predict. You know what? I kind of want to see the Stanley Cup back in Canada, so if it's not the Canes, I hope it's the Oilers.
Yeah, I'm a little biased towards that Oilers bias, too. I want to see Connor McDavid lift the cup. It'd also be kind of funny to see Jack Campbell and Zach Hyman lift it, too.
Oh, that would be nice for sure.
But I don't know. I have a feeling we haven't seen Jake Oettinger turn it on for Dallas yet. If he turns it on, I think Dallas could run away with this.
Yeah, because I thought Jake Oettinger would be the goalie that kind of stands on his head for a team. It's been Bobrovsky so far, but Oettinger might be the next one up.
We'll exactly. See. Yeah. Now, listen, it's been enough playoffs talk. Let's talk about something I can actually talk about now. Let's talk about the NHL draft. What were your just initial thoughts on just how it all went down, you know, how the order formatted? How do you feel about it?
I know this is the first draft lottery situation where the odds kind of lived up to expectations for the most part until that very ending. I was more so curious to see where the Habs would select because I did not want them to have another first overall pick. So yeah. I'm glad they stayed at their number 5 spot. They'll get a great player regardless.
Absolutely.
But what I found so interesting is how Kevin Weeks leaked the Columbus Blue Jackets pick before the commercial.
That was so... I literally looked at my girlfriend. I was like, that just happened?
It's so funny to me.
Yeah, that was surprising. I mean, obviously, you know, Chicago winning, Bedard's, he's going there. I mean, it's not confirmed, but we can all basically confirm it. I don't know how I don't like the fact that Chicago had that pick to begin with.
Yeah.
With the whole situation that happened with them, obviously.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, teams have gotten lost picks for, like, when you're, like you know, altering with, like, draft prospects and stuff like that. And for the Hawks to still have that pick after something like that, that big of a cover-up, I think I wasn't alone on the hockey Twitter community. They're not liking that one.
Sure, yeah.
That being said, my thoughts on Montreal picking at 5, I'm ecstatic with it, as long as they don't screw it up. Yeah. I think literally what Montreal needs to do is they just need to see how 1, 2, 3, and 4 go. And, you know, obviously Bedard 1, Fantilli 2. Whoever goes 3 and 4, you literally pick who's next.
Yeah,
whether it's Michkov, whether it's Smith, whether it's Carlson, all three of those guys are going to be fantastic in a Montreal jersey. Literally, this is the easiest pick to make. Don't mess this up. If you're Kent Hughes and watching this somehow, please don't mess this up.
So basically, Rahil does not want a curveball like they threw at everybody at the Hockey World in last year's
draft. But at least that was like, there was talk of it.
That's
you know what I mean? There hasn't been talk of Bedard, Fantilli, Michkov, Smith, Carlson. That's literally been the top 5 for, I'd say, 90% of the season.
Right.
Don't screw this up, guys. And, hey, listen, Saphir, we're going to segue into this a little bit, of course, but the NHL World Championship is going to be in Nashville the day before the draft. So, who knows? Maybe we'll be watching Michkov put on a Habs jersey. That'd be nice.
And if I go to the draft, I'll definitely be wearing my Leafs jersey again. But thankfully, no Habs fans to boo me around really hard this time.
That was a great time. But let's dive a little bit into the esports side of things. So obviously, we just had the NHL 23 European Championship go on. For those of you that did not know, Ekki won that. He ended up beating Teppanen. I believe it was straight. Was it straight games or was it? 2-0 or was it? I can't remember.
Him and Teppanen in the finals went to game 3 overtime.
It was game 3 overtime. Okay. I knew it was. Yeah. I couldn't remember exactly what it was.
Yeah, they were close.
Testament to both those players. But I think, Saphir, the first place we got to start off with is Nicky Dangles finishing in 4th out of the 4 for round robin. That was a bit of a surprise.
Yeah, it was a bit of a surprise. And you know what? While I was watching the games, I didn't really think much of it. And then I went back after. And if you just look at Nicky's body language, he seemed really nervous.
Yeah.
That entire time. And it's really unfortunate because here's a guy who actually has a lot of experience, but everybody knows that unfortunately he hasn't been able to live up or play up to his potential at these LAN events, and unfortunately he couldn't get it done once again. I really thought this was going to be his year, man.
Yeah, it was really close too, and for those of you who don't know, I believe it was after the second of the three round, or the second of the four round robins, or three actually it would be, everyone had one win.
That's right.
So it was very close, and it was very like whoever wins the third games is going to go. And Ekki obviously finishing first, but then Tempinen just barely getting in with that overtime loss that he had in game three, I believe it was, or game two. Yeah. But I think that was kind of Nicky Dangles' like opportunity there, because even after game two, you know, you play your first game, you play your second game, the nerves are still there, but you kind of played two already, but yeah, you still have a shot. And then obviously, you know, wasn't able to get it done, which is a little bit disappointing. But then that semifinal, Sophia, that semifinal was fun.
Dude, yeah. Well, one other thing I was going to say about Nicky Dangles is that, you know, the way that the format is structured for this tournament, it gives you multiple opportunities to make it to the semifinals, right? And so you have a guy like Ekki who actually loses his first game to Tempinen, right? Mm-hmm. And you can tell Ekki was really frustrated from that, but at the same time, he knew that it wasn't over, mm-hmm, and he was able to maintain his confidence and carry it over to all the way to a European I believe it's fifth European title now.
Yeah.
But in terms of the semifinals, dude, that was incredible. Hanzo Lino versus Tempinen going to overtime. And Hanzo Lino winning in overtime is the only reason Ekki ended up winning the title.
Exactly. And then obviously going into the semifinals, I mean, Hanzo Lino and Tempinen were both, you know, very well. The first game was close. Second game was a little bit more of a blowout. I think Tempinen moving on, though, was the result we kind of expected, Safir, across the board. No disrespect to Hanzo Lino, of course, but Tempinen's kind of, you know, he's been there before.
Yeah, the surprising thing with Tempinen is that while he has been competing in lots of different tournaments, I don't remember, at least in the last couple of years, him being at the European finals. And so for him to do it is really remarkable. I also didn't know that. I think he's 22 years old.
Yeah.
So it's really nice to see, in terms of age in this community, 22 is still like on the older end for competitive players. Yep. So it's really nice to see somebody who wasn't like dominant in his like late teen years be this dominant at this age. It's kind of like, you know, never lose hope as you start to lose your thumbs when you get older.
I love that comment because I literally feel like a like 50 to 55 year old, and I know No Sleeves feels like the grandpa of the NHL community right now. Yeah, for us older folks, it's nice to see someone in their 20s kind of competing and doing pretty well there. Obviously, both Ekki and Tempinen are going to be in Nashville June 27th for the NHL World Championship. They'll be the two coming in from the EU side, which will be a little bit interesting, I think, because being in Nashville, Ekki's obviously had a little bit of LAN experience when he's come over to North America, especially with the Isle stuff that we had going on. But how is that going to factor in with these two kind of coming over and quote-unquote playing in enemy territory because it's not EU side?
That is such a great question and an important topic to talk about, because like I'm also thinking back to the previous Chell Intel report that you had brought up last podcast. I know they released a new one recently, but when talking about Tempinen, they talk about how reserved he is as a player, and while he has nerves, you know, he tries to play reserve, he tries to stay focused, and he definitely showed that at the Euro Championship. And I honestly expect more of the same.
Yep.
For him, you know, considering he did so well against Ekki, I give the favorite odds to Ekki as well at the Worlds. I mean, Ekki is the first time world champion back in 2018. On another year, he was really close. I think he lost to John Wayne. So you factor in a lot of the experiences from Ekki's side, and for Tempinen to show that he can hang in there with Ekki,
exactly,
makes me think that he'll be just fine.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting. I think Ekki, obviously, he's won 5 out of the last 6 European championships. He's literally been there. He's done that. Yeah. He knows that. And now he has that experience. And I think what's going to be really interesting is we'll get into it a little bit later, but there's not that much experience on the NA side. And we'll touch upon it in a little bit. But I think that's really going to give Ekki an advantage when he comes over to Nashville. Yeah. But Tempinen too. I mean, even like Tempinen, like I wouldn't be surprised to see an Ekki Tempinen final in Nashville. What do you think, Sophia?
I wouldn't be surprised either, because honestly, if you look at the NA players, there's some inexperience there. There are some players like Joe's who we know is so good at the game but hasn't been necessarily consistent at LAN events, right? So yeah. I honestly wouldn't be surprised either to see Tempinen versus Ekki at that live finals event. Mm-hmm. I think it's also going to come down to like, you know, some balances and like a lot of game factors as well, but it's going to be a really close show. And so honestly, one other thing that I think about Ekki is just the fact that he has been in these events where he's had heartbreaking losses, right? Like, when I'm thinking back to the second World Championship in Las Vegas, when he lost to John Wayne in like the dying seconds of the third period, he gave up the lead. And then he had a kind of a heartbreaking loss to Regs back in December. Like, this is a scarred but very accomplished player. And so this is why I feel like the pressure and all of that that's going to be there for Eki is not going to faze him that much.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think he's been through that adversity, you could say, basically. So he's kind of going to be able to pull out of that. Now, I'm going to ask this when it comes to, at least on the EU side, you know, for next year going forward. Can anyone beat Eki? I mean, he's won 5 of 6. He's won 3 in a row now from 2021 to 2023. Is he the Tampa Bay Lightning now? Is he that dynasty? Like, what do you think, Saphir? Because, they're close games, but he just keeps pulling them out.
Yeah, for anybody watching the competitive scene in the EU, they would say that the logical answer to that is somebody like Nicky Dangles. But he's had a few opportunities, and Eki has still maintained his position.
Exactly.
But then you also look at other places like Sisu. So the Finnish championship tournament just ended yesterday, actually. Mm-hmm. Shout out to Tempanen, by the way. He's the Finnish champ. Really impressive. Sisu came in third place. He's a 16-year-old kid.
That's incredible. Yeah. Wow. And what was I doing when I was 16? I don't even remember.
Yeah.
I don't want to remember. Wasn't doing that.
Yeah, so, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if a kid like Sisu grows up to be the guy that takes Eki head on. And Eki himself, you know, he talks about, like, how the game continues to get more and more competitive every single year, right? And so the other thing, too, maybe something you can allude to is the fact that we have new people coming in every year. It's not just guys like Sisu.
Exactly. I think that is the perfect segue. Thanks. This man is great with segues, by the way. Perfect segue into previewing the NHL 2023 North American Championship that we're going to have going on. I believe it's going to be a week from tomorrow. It's going to be May 20th, 1 p.m. Eastern on Twitch and everything. Go watch it, guys. And tell us a little bit about where it's actually going to be, because this is kind of a new thing that we have going on, at least with the Washington Capitals and someone who we're going to talk about, District E. I think this is awesome.
Oh, dude, District E is an incredible venue. It's adjacent to the Capitals One Arena. As we know, it's home to the Washington Capitals and the Washington Wizards. It's 14,000 square foot, so it's a large space. I love that you have a dedicated esports space for things
Absolutely.
Like this, right? And if I'm not mistaken, I think Cam signed on with them.
He's
there like once a month, right?
Yep.
So that really goes to show like how much this thing is growing with NHL esports in collaboration with like NHL organizations and having esports specific venues. I don't think we've had that for NHL esports, GWC, or World Championships.
No, and I know obviously here in Toronto we have the, for like the Raptors, they have the Bell Arena and stuff like that. But to have a dedicated like NHL esports one a little bit is kind of cool. And I think the really exciting thing about this is like it's not just an esports arena.
That's right.
They have fans for Wizards game and Capital games in there. I'm pretty sure I saw a District E video and Ovechkin was in it.
Yeah.
And like we've talked about it with other people on the podcast before. It's hard to get like NHL players to work with this whole side of things. Ovechkin's literally talking, like, that's so cool, Saphir.
It's so cool. And you know what? If unfortunately, I won't be in Washington for this, but if I was there, I read an article talking about the culinary experience at District E2. That would be something that, like, not quite related to esports, but just like an entertainment value, I would definitely want to experience.
I'm a big foodie. So, you know what? Maybe next year we'll have to hit up District E for a major event, but let's dive into the final four we have going on, Saphir. So I think the first thing that everyone notices when you look at the four that are here, which by the way, if you don't know, there's Jost, Cad, Duncan, and Sky. Only Jost was at GWC last year, and Jost didn't even play at the main event. He was eliminated during the final eight, during the semifinal. Well, semifinals. I guess it's the semifinals of the quarter. Yeah.
Yeah.
But like, so we have someone here who finished five through eight, who's the only player there with experience. What does this mean for the NA side? Should we be concerned over here?
You know what? The thing that I'm definitely concerned about is the lack of predictability this year, which can also be a good thing, obviously. Yeah. Like, you do want new winners and all that, but I'm definitely concerned for the North American side going up against Europe next month in Nashville. But Jost is such an interesting story because he got dominated by Regs last year. And then he comes back and takes him, he sweeps Regs, and he comes back from like, I think game two is like a 4-goal deficit. I mean, this guy is on a mission, and I know I've motivated him too with through our power rankings, and you know, he's had some shortcomings, you know, losing at the Bolts Challenge LAN tournament to I think Polks was the eventual winner for that. So this guy is on a mission. And then the other players, I mean, you have Cad, who's won 1v1 titles as well, but he's mainly a sixes guy. His last 1v1 title, I think, was the Bolts Challenge as well a few years ago, the first ever, actually. And then you have Sky, who's completely inexperienced at these kind of events, and Duncan, as good as he is, also inexperienced.
Yeah, it's you know what's really interesting? It's almost reminding me of the playoffs this year.
Oh, yeah.
You have, like, a couple good, like, experienced teams. You have, like, Edmonton there. You have Dallas there. But then you have these teams who are just, like, budding for the first time, like Seattle. You have, obviously, like, you can even throw Florida into that mix a little bit, too. So it's going to be really interesting, I think, because it's either going to go one of two ways, and I think both are going to be great storylines for NA. It's either going to be Jost kind of, you know, redeeming himself and, you know, pushing himself up there and making it to Nashville, or it's going to be, there will be someone else new with him, but there's going to be new people that are going to be, you know, winning this, and that's going to be a new storyline, and that's going to be, you know, they're going to be the buzzword. They're going to be the thing everyone talks about.
That's right.
When it comes to each of these individual players, we don't want to leak too much for the EU guys. No offense, Ekki and Tempinen. But when these players play, what are their tendencies like? What are the things they kind of like to do, look for in the play and that kind of stuff?
Yeah, that's such a great question, too. You know, when we generalize the play styles of EU players in NA, we know that EU players, they're very passive, trap-heavy players, while NA players are more so aggressive and run-and-gun kind of players. But then you look at a guy like Duncan, and I would like to touch up on each of their play styles a little bit. Duncan is really interesting. I think a key reason why he has been this successful is his patience. What he does in the offensive zone, especially if he has the lead, if he doesn't see any openings at the blue line, he will reset. Like, he will leave the offensive zone, come back to center ice, and I know that aggravates players. I mean, if that was me, that would aggravate me too. But it's so smart, and that's how he gets like a stranglehold of players. That's how he was able to beat Regs and make it to the LAN event. That's how he was able to beat Sasho. And like, how would you feel if you were on the receiving end of that?
I'd be frustrated.
Yeah.
But it reminds me very much of like European football or soccer. It reminds me of that possession thing, and like, I know it's like time on attack is a stat in NHL, but it's kind of that, like, if I have the puck, I control what's going on. Similar to like soccer, if I'm controlling the ball, I'm controlling what's going on. If they're gonna go the other way, it's a result of an action I'm gonna make. So I think Duncan has that kind of I almost want to call it like a maestro mindset, where he's like almost like big braining it, so to speak. It would be frustrating to go against, because like, even when I'm playing, like when I played LG for a bit, like in the playoffs, like even just you have five guys wide always, like especially in the playoffs when it comes to competitive, you'll notice if you're watching sixes, everyone's on the blue line playing defense. Everyone is back. But then like, if there's nothing there, the smart teams just reset.
That's right.
Exit the zone, D to D, find their center again and just work it through. And I think Duncan does that fantastically.
Dude, he absolutely does. And you know what? Our good friend Sap Alien kind of plays like that too. Like last year, you know, a key reason why he made it to Montreal was his patience. You know, he did it against Polks too. And when they had played for the Xbox title, Polks barely beats him in game three of the second series. So it is a very smart play style. And, you know, Duncan, that's his key strength, right? Like, I've played Duncan a few times this year. He's had my number, and that is his patience, his ability to control the puck and not rush things is definitely a key reason that he has been so successful this year.
This is why I'm so glad Zafir is on the podcast, because he can play all these guys and I just sit here and listen.
Appreciate that, buddy. And then you've got, now I know I mentioned this last episode, I can't wait to see Sky versus Duncan. These are two guys that are not big fans of each other, and their play styles, you know, when you go up against Duncan, you kind of have to use his own strategy against him too when you really think about it. And Sky is actually a player that plays kind of slow too, and he will kill a lot of clock behind your own net.
Yeah.
So that's kind of how Sky does it. He'll like wait for the Polk's goal, or he'll like hold, protect puck, and then go for like a backhand wraparound. That's kind of Sky's play style. So I'm really interested to see how that play style goes. How would you suspect that would go?
I think those two play styles going against each other is really going to be interesting. You obviously have the, you know, patience, I'm not afraid to leave the zone and come back in Duncan. But then you have like the count, like a similar counter, I guess an alternative to that, where, you know, you have Sky kind of being like, I will just sit here and wait for something
to happen.
I will hold on to the puck and do what I have to do to make something happen. And I think it's going to be interesting, because that battle to me The second you mention those two, it comes down to defense.
Yes.
That's all it comes down to. It Absolutely. Comes down to who can be better, whether it's Sky being able to take advantage of Duncan coming out of the zone and capitalizing, maybe getting a turnover and stuff like that, or whether it's Duncan being able to limit Sky behind the net and that kind of stuff. It really is like, it's almost like they're both strong offensively, and it's like whoever can be above average defensively or slightly better than the other defensively, I think is going to pull it off.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And that's going to be a difference maker between those two. I totally agree. And like, obviously that all relates to like patience because they're both patient. So I'm curious to see what happens at a LAN event when one of them is down, like this panic set in knowing how the other person plays, right? It's all like, it's a mental game. Half of it is a mental game. Mm-hmm. But then we've got Joe's. Joe's is like a complete like flip from Duncan and Sky. That guy is a run and gun kind of player.
Yeah.
His counter offense and rush play is probably the best that I've seen this year. He is absolutely dangerous. And when I watched him play junior Pens, Joe's, well, Pens, because Joe's is also good with going behind the net and scoring the pokes. Mm-hmm. So what Joe's would do is he's really good at adapting. And he burned Pens in the middle of the ice at the high slot because Pens kept thinking, knowing Joe's pass and with this competitive game, Joe's would go behind the net. And Joe's so adaptable. He knows how to respond and tackle your weakness. And that's what he did to junior Pens. And I'm curious to see how he would respond to these slow play styles.
Yeah, I think that is, Joe's has a very, very strong opportunity there, I think, Saphir.
Yeah.
I almost look at, I don't know why I'm comparing everything to European football, but like I see it that and sense, it's so tactical. Like, Joe's reminds me of those teams where you're watching a game and someone's dominating possession, they're getting chances, and then Joe's gets the puck and bang, he's gone and it's in the net. And I think that adaptability is going to be huge for him too, because if Duncan or Sky change a little bit, he's able to adapt to that and kind of adjust and find the right way to do things, kind of similar to how he did with junior Pens. But I think that whole counterattack run and gun kind of gameplay he really has is really going to be effective against a patient kind of play style on the other side. Now, that being said, he's obviously going up against CAD first. So tell us a little bit about how CAD plays, because for Joe to get to Duncan or Sky, he's got to go through CAD.
You know, I have so much respect for CAD with his accomplishments over the year. Mm-hmm. I mean, like I said earlier, this is a sixes player now who was considered a top three 1v1 player for the longest time until he made the transition. Yeah. So for him to be back at the stage is really remarkable and a testament to his natural ability in the game. Mm-hmm. CAD, he's not so much as a patient player as like Duncan and Sky, but he is naturally very good defensively. Like he's gonna get his pokes timed really well. He is able to clog the blue line really well. And one thing that you definitely don't wanna do against CAD, because I've been burned by this so many times, is go with your DDD passing. Because for some reason, this guy just gets up at the right moment with his forward, intercepts the puck, and the amount of times that have been scored like that is unbelievable. So his ability to read plays is one of the best. And relating to the whole idea of him being able to read plays in the offensive zone, he is so good. He doesn't necessarily try to kill the clock or anything. He doesn't really go behind the net as much.
Yeah.
But one thing that he is able, that he's really good at, is able to LT or do the half spins really well, and he's able to time them so well. So when you go for a bump, nothing happens.
Yeah.
Because he times it so perfectly. And that is frustrating to play against.
And that is going to be really interesting, because you almost have, like, this is almost like that Super Bowl matchup where it's like you have, like, the Kansas City Chiefs against, like, you know, the top-rated defense. Yeah. Like, you know, the Broncos back in their prime when they actually had a good defense. And it's kind of that, like, again, it's similar to the other matchup. And I think this is what's really exciting about this NA side, is it's not Regs, Gren, the two guys who always win it, we know who's going to win it, is there's four players who all have a good shot of winning, but there's really good individual matchups and individual, like, behind the scenes. Like, with CAD, I think if he's able to really kind of master that Joe's counterattack, and he's able to turn that into a counterattack of his own, I think that's going to be kind of the big tell of that series. But, like, Joe's, this is where it gets into it, too, is if he starts getting frustrated, if he starts getting a little nervous, that's where I think Joe's has a slight edge over everyone else, because he was at GWC last year. Yeah. Now, it wasn't in front of fans, because they played, the final eight played the day before fans that's were there. Right. So that is part of it too, but he did have a little bit of that pressure, a bit of that LAN experience to a degree, which is more than the other three had. So I think based off of that, it's kind of going to be a really close series.
Yeah, you know what, two thoughts come to mind, and the second one was more so as a question, but no, you're right, that experience will come in as a factor, and like, so overall, when we think about these four players, we can categorize Jost and Cat as more offensive base.
Yeah.
Because you're right, Cat, he is able, both Cat and Jost, really, you give them one chance, it's in the back of your net, right? Mm-hmm. Despite the fact that I mentioned Cat is so good defensively. I mean, when you combine the two, you're just really good at the game. That's why Cat's here. But he is more known for his offense, for sure, his ability to protect the puck, and Jost, likewise, very good offensively. So I'm curious to see what's going to come out on top, offense and defense, you know? So it's going to be a really interesting thing. Mm-hmm. And then you briefly touched up on last year's GWC in Montreal. Perhaps for viewers who don't know, give them a little bit of a overview in terms of like the experiences that the players go to, the lead up to the big day, really. You mentioned last year it was like a couple days.
Yeah, so basically the day before they played in a, the final eight played, I think it was 1-8, 2-7, kind of like that structure format. And they played, I believe it was a best of three or a best of five series.
Yeah, I think it was three.
And that was a closed venue. No one could really go in. It was just the players and a couple other people. And then the four that won from that were able to actually compete the next day on stage in front of everyone on Twitch at the venue that most people probably watched. And I think when you kind of talk about that and it gets really interesting is it's not just showing up and playing at one, but that's not going to be there anymore. Because now it's just two from EU, two from NA. So when June 27th hits, I don't know if there's going to be anything before because there's not going to be eight people there. There's going to be four people. Yeah. So you're taking away that element of like playing a little bit more, getting the thumbs kind of ready, which I think is going to be something that maybe it's a good thing no one from last year, like who played in the finals, was here this year, because that would be a curveball.
No, you know, that is so true. It's like last year they ease up to the big day, because like you mentioned, you played off stream the day before. And this time it's not going to be like that. Like you're there on the big day, you're live on stream, and you get right to it, right? So you don't want to be in a situation where the nerves kind of take over, you want to play your best. Mm. But when I think about last year, I think just beyond the outside of the whole competitive aspect was just like the awesome community building that we saw. Yep. You know, like I've been to Montreal only twice in my life, and I love Montreal. It's a fantastic city, and just being there in the downtown core, like sometimes I think to myself, if I wasn't living in Toronto, I would be living in Montreal. But the one thing that I loved was just like everywhere you went downtown, you probably ran into somebody that you knew because the NHL draft was taking place. Mm-hmm. So the community building aspect of the whole thing about this tournament is probably my most favorite part.
Yeah, I will never forget to this day, the day of the draft, I believe it was. I was walking to meet with Safir, and I saw some Ottawa people with Ottawa polos going by. And all I hear, I forget what pick it was, but I hear, oh yeah, you know, like it's likely we move this pick for one of these guys.
Yeah.
And I posted it in a Discord, and that day the Sens traded that pick for it's Alex DeBrincat. That was the coolest thing ever. I felt like Elliot Friedman is an actual insider. But I think it's going to be really interesting in Nashville because Nashville has less of that hockey, Canadian kind of like, you know, like if you're wearing a GWC or a WC, I guess we can call it now, jersey down in Nashville, most people probably aren't going to know what it is.
Yeah.
But that being said, I think Nashville is just a way more fun city. Yeah. When I went, I went previously and it was absolutely electric. If you are there the night before, be careful. it is very dangerous. It is very fun and very loud. But that being said, like because the draft's going to be around there, you have this whole kind of hockey knit community tying into everything. And I think that's going to be fun. But aside from just the hockey community, we can even talk about the Chell community. Because when you and I were there last year, we had people coming up to us like, oh, hey, like, nice to meet you. I'm so-and-so. Like, oh, and they were like, hey, they were talking about, oh, I'm their gamer tag. Like, I'm so-and-so. Oh, yeah, you're Angry Brown Dude or whatever. And I'm like, yeah, like, it's not first name basis. It's gamer tag basis, which is like,
it's
kind of cool, but kind of like, I'm still getting used to it a little bit.
Yeah, I was like, yo, what's up, Boily?
Yeah, what's up, Boily? Or like, oh my God. I saw Cam. I was like, yo, no sleeves. What's up, man? Like, so funny.
Can you imagine being on the streets and saying, yo, what's up, no sleeves? Well, people are riding around.
Funny
like,
story.
No
I think
sleeves.
Cam will let me tell this. He told me the story of how he was walking in Montreal and he walked by this couple and the dude turns around and goes, you're no sleeves. And he's like, oh, hey. And the dude's like, dude, you saved my heart team with your YouTube videos. Thanks so much. And his wife's like, who the hell is no, what? But that kind of like community vibe is going to be awesome. I hope I'm going to do whatever I can to make sure I get down to Nashville. It's a great city and just tying in the draft around it. The Nashville Predators too. awesome organization.
Of course, you're a big fan, yeah.
I'm going to give them a bit of a plug here. We're running out of time. I'm going to give them a bit of a plug. Last year when I went to Nashville, the day I was supposed to go, it was for work. They weren't playing, but they were playing the night before. So I tweeted out to like my followers. I was like, do you guys think it'd be worth me paying, you know, this much and changing my flight this much and getting an extra night at the hotel and getting Preds tickets? Well, the Preds replied to me and said, hey, just send us a screenshot. You're actually coming and we'll give you tickets. And I will post the picture on Twitter now for anyone who wants to look. An Angry Brown Guy on Twitter. I was literally like 15 rows from the ice.
Wow.
And their Preds game crew came over and gave me and my boss like swag packs and everything.
That's amazing.
Awesome organization. They're fun on Twitter. I couldn't think of a better place for the draft to be and the NHL World Championship to be. So I'm excited for it. Sophia, who's winning?
I love how you just hype up the Nashville Predators and then just lay on the toughest question.
That's what I do.
I'll be rooting for North America. It just makes sense, obviously. We're going Ecky.
Yeah. I think Ecky's just had the experience. I think he's going to prove it and win it. That being said, I would love to see someone new win this year. So,
You know what? Take this as motivation, you NA players. And
even the EU, even Tampere.
That's true. Even Tampere, yeah. Because I predicted Tampere would actually finish fourth. Mm-hmm. You know, so, I mean, good for that guy. So
good for shutting Sofia up.
Yeah, exactly. Just like how Tampere did it at the European Championship, I want to see somebody from NA prove us wrong.
Absolutely. I think that'd be awesome. And on that note, guys, thank you so much for watching and listening. And we will see you guys next time. Have a good day.